You're listening to The Carol Cox Show on 1080 AM K108.
Alrighty, good morning and welcome to the Carol Cox Show. Another good Sunday morning. We are jumping around here like we're in a parade. And I'm going to have several things going on today. And boy, if you get your wires crossed, you end up having a mistake here. And so what happens is the... We're going to have Mr. Jim Anthony calling in from LIA for the first 30 minutes or so, and we're going to be tossing around what's occurring at LIA and the development as it's basically picking up where we left off earlier conversation, and we're going to be updating you on what's going on there with the new development and all of that. And we also have a guest that will be coming in, Miss Momi Robbins, and she's going to be talking about her book and some of the very sensitive and fragile issues over there in Waianae about relationships and what's going on in the community. Her book is Candy Canes and Coke, and I hope that in the second hour you join me for that, and we'll be talking, and we'll also talk about... Mr. Rex Johnson and where he is now and where he's about and who he's hanging out with. So without any other delay, Jim, good morning and how are you?
Hi, good morning. Could be a lot worse.
Well, you're alive.
You're still breathing.
On your own.
Yes. without external assistance so far.
Exactly, because I don't think we could afford it anymore, can we?
I'm afraid not.
I see Border and Water Supply is asking the public for their comments on a 70% increase.
I shall be there tomorrow afternoon, large as life.
Yeah, and I'm thinking to myself, well, they really want 25, but they jack it up to 70, and so we come in and we think we have a compromise, and we end up getting screwed.
Well, it's really a little bit more complicated than that.
Mm-hmm.
There are a very large number of people who are, and the public doesn't know this, who have been, for a very long time, had straws in various aquifers on Oahu, 300 of them.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't pay a penny for all the water that they take.
Right.
If they started charging some of these people for the water that they take, they wouldn't have to charge the public either 25% or 75%. But I'm going to argue that before the Board of Water Supply tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. And they're going to give us a drenching anyway with the water, Board of Water Supply.
Mm-hmm.
It's quasi-government, quasi-private, and the bottom line is you know who's going to get the washing, get washed out.
Mm-hmm.
It's the wallet, taxpayer's wallet. Mm-hmm. Anyway, what's going on at LIA? Last week there was a vote, city council or before the commission. What happened there?
Rather an interesting development at the city council level. The SMA permit application was on the agenda, and the recommendation in the form of this of the submittal that was before the council was that they would have to do a watershed plan and a master drainage plan. The attendant condition was that both those plans would have to be completed. And until they were completed and vetted by DPP and then sent on to the council for further review, that there would be no building over and above ground level.
Mm-hmm.
And we were somewhat apprehensive about that. We thought that that those conditions were fine. They didn't go far enough. We were there to argue that the two plans would not only have to go before DPP, but they would have to go back to the council. And the council would have to put it on its agenda, subject both plans to its own review, and then open it up for further public debate. Well, before we could get to that, we were informed that the council would introduce a new action item for the council to discuss and for members of the public to respond to. And that action item was that the council dramatically decided that they were going to defer taking any action until the next meeting of the council, which is, I think, September 17th. Now, that was a dramatic development. The council then, having heard public testimony from a fairly large number of people, several senior members of the council, Kachola, for example, and Ikaika Anderson, and a couple of others, led the debate and said that they were going to defer because they wanted to see whether there might be some chance of the parties, namely the applicants, the Mormon Church applicants on the one hand, and people who opposed it, people mostly meaning stakeholders from Kolaaloa and Kolaupoko, who opposed it might be able to get together. And I think the theory was that they'd get together under some kind of leadership provided by the council itself and discuss the intricacies and the complexities of this of the hotel. Now, your listeners need to know that we're not only talking about a hotel here. We're talking about what the hotel and a number of other structures. Now, what used to be there was a 49-room, two-story hotel. And the total square footage for that hotel was approximately 10,000 square feet. There's a service station there that's about 4,000 square feet, or 3,000. McDonald's, about another 4,000. So the total square footage of the structures that are there right now, well, the The hotel, of course, has been demolished, but the total footprint was about 17,000 square feet. What they are proposing is a hotel of 222 rooms, which is 153,140 square feet. A new McDonald's, which will be 4,000 square feet, and commercial buildings of another 16,000 square feet. So when you add all of that up, it comes to 173,140 square feet, and one of the structures is going to be four stories high. So you get a factor of 10 increase from 17,000 square feet to 173,140 square feet in an area that is rural, even though the nine acres or so on which all of this new development is to take place is zoned resort and commercial. So that's the magnitude of the job before us. The council says, why don't you guys try and have some discussions and see whether you can reach some kind of common ground and a compromise. And as far as I know, even though I have not heard anything specific, steps are being taken to ensure that some discussions take place. That's mm-hmm. where we are.
So what can the people do? We call them listeners, but they're really taxpayers.
From my perspective, I have to look at this through a lens at which I need to get a realistic assessment of what the political landscape looks like. Your listeners who are listening in, it's important for them to share their disappointment that something like 173,000 square feet of new construction. This is only one part of what the Mormon Church entities in Lahia are thinking about. Now remember, this so-called hotel development, which is not only a hotel, is only one small, very small part of the larger development that they are calling Envision Lahia and that we are calling Invasion Lahia. They're talking about 850 homes, markets, etc. They're talking about affordable homes, but they have never indicated what affordable means. They've given us no dollar prices. With respect to the hotel, for example, just stepping back a bit, they have taken the same position with not making any disclosures about what these hotel rooms are going to cost.
Mm-hmm.
An experienced, long-experienced developer of hotels like Marriott, and Marriott is going to be developing this hotel, I find it incredulous that they don't know what these hotel rooms are going to cost. I can say a little bit more about that later. But returning to the substance of your question, Carol, your listeners can call their council people, and this is an important step that they can take. Call their local council person or call the chair of the council and say, building these kinds of things in an area that is rural and that belongs to all of the people of Hawaii, including particularly the people of Oahu and people who come to visit. This is the last stretch. Kolaloa and Kolaupoko remain the last stretch of anything that remotely resembles a rural landscape in Hawaii. This is, to invoke a Mormon expression taken from their own teachings. This is our pearl of great price, this strip of land from Kolaloa to Kolaupoko. And it's useful for your listeners as they contemplate this and they try to get a measure of it, they try to get their arms around this. It is useful for them to remember, to take their minds back no more than about 100 years. Waikiki used to be a tiny little fishing village. Not much more than 100 years ago, 100, 125 years ago. Hawaiians used to live there. They had taro. They fished. Once the virus of urbanization began, now I know all of the arguments about progress and so on. I'm prepared to concede some of those. Once the virus of urbanization set in Waikiki, it spread around Diamond Head to Kahala, from Kahala into Ainahina, Ainahina into Kuleo'o, Kuleo'o into that area that is now Hawaii Kai, where there was a celebrated fight in the 1970s called the Kalama Valley Struggle. That's where the Hawaiian independence movement, in a sense, began. There was a, the fight was about a pig farmer who was being evicted. We need to remember that, the creeping of urbanization continued along that corridor past what is now Hawaii Kai into Waimanalo. Waimanalo has been urbanized to some extent, but beyond that into Enchanted Lakes, Kailua, and into Kaneohe. And we say, in desperation, we say, enough is enough. Mm-hmm. And in a sense, sometimes I feel like Rosa Parks saying, I ain't sitting in the back of that bus. Mm-hmm. And I think we need more people to say, enough is enough. We're not going to sit in the back of this bus, and we're going to take a position with our council people. Council people need to be supported. They need to feel that they have electoral support with people saying, hands off the Windward Coast. Mm-hmm. Basically, that's what your listeners can do, and I hope that they will.
Now, I see that they can go to the city council website and pull up any documents. Is there any website or anything that they could brief themselves on? I'm sure a lot of them are not aware of everything going on before they call the councilman. Is there any source?
Yeah, you know, I think they should call council. They should call Ikaika Anderson, who's planning now of both, who's chair, by the way, of okay. both planning and zoning.
Mm-hmm.
His office number is available. The council has its own series of websites. I think that members of the council, like Kachola, he's an important spokesman and an important thinker on the council.
Mm-hmm.
And all of them have email addresses. So if your listeners can get on their computers and send them messages saying that the proposed hotel developments in La'ie are just something.
Now, Anderson is on the zoning as the chairman of the zoning and planning. Now,
correct.
Is that... is there concerns that he may vote in favor of the developer? Because in somewhere along his bloodline, there is some developers in his bloodline that is interested in building out there, the Andersons. Is that going to be a problem?
You know, based on what I heard Ikaika Anderson say very clearly on Wednesday of last week when the council met, he was a strong voice saying, we the council, and your listeners have to also have some kind of understanding of the SMA process. The SMA process is more of a political process than it is a judicial process. This is not what's called a Chapter 92-driven process. Chapter 92 is the administrative rules which govern contested case hearings and appeals that citizen stakeholders might make first to a contested case hearing and then later on appeal to the Supreme Court. SMA procedures are not that kind of procedure.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people don't understand that. And the SMA process has largely been determined by a 1989 case that the Sandy Beach Coalition brought against the city and lost. So people need to be aware of that, and so this is a very narrow process. This is despite this, Ikaika Anderson was saying loud and clearly. He was saying we are going to take into account what this means for traffic, because the normal pattern is, as you know, I'm a developer. I have this big development. The road near which I have developed my development needs to be widened, you know, like 5 years down the road.
Mm-hmm.
They knew it when they started the development. So they dump it on the taxpayer. So we carry the can. The developer gets a free lunch. And they were clearly signaling that both Kachola particularly and Ikaika Anderson, they were clearly signaling on the record that they want to look at the larger implications of this. What are the implications of this for the larger footprint on a rural community? So they're going to look at traffic. Mm-hmm. They're going to look at sewage. Remember, that sewage treatment plant, I think the last time I was on your show, I tried to explain to your listeners that sewage treatment plant currently processing 500,000 gallons of sewage a day has a capacity of 0.9. It's never been tested at 0.9. I checked recently with the Department of Health and found out that they're way back on the monitoring that they're supposed to do. I mean, this is a stunning piece of information. I think that some of those things which were not even canvassed and covered in the findings of fact that came down from the DPP, I think the council is going to take a strong, they're going to take a close look at. They're going to take it. The applicants want to build 16,000 square feet of additional space for meetings and little boutique stores that sell stuff and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to see an inventory of just how many meeting places already exist on BYU campus. And I think the council is also going to look at, the applicant's claims that this is going to be a hotel for local people. Come on, give me a break.
Well, let's look at the Disneyland.
Disneyland of PCC?
No, at Aulani. They look
at Aulani.
Look at the cost that they are projecting for a hotel room just for on the east side over there.
How much?
We was talking about $400 or so.
I'm not going to be able to afford that. I know you're going to be able to afford it, right?
Oh man, with all the money I rake in, in fact, I'm going to buy the place and give it back to the city.
I'll come and work for you.
Yeah, and then we'll both be goofy at the end of the day.
Right.
We have absolutely this. There's trickery. And at what point will this go before the Planning Commission? And you talk about that it's not a judicial process.
No. Just the hotel. The only thing that is before the council,
mm-hmm.
and your listeners need to grasp this and understand it fundamentally. There were most of the people who were there on Wednesday have no clue that this is an SMA permit application that is before the council.
Right.
And it is only for the hotel. The big blast is yet to come.
Right, right.
That's going to be, LUC matters. It's going to be state regulatory matters, mm-hmm. county regulatory matters, and so on. That's down the road.
Well,
that's all protected.
That's what I'm asking. My point was going to be is that don't rely some of those listening that want to engage. Don't rely that, maybe the city council will stop it. Well, they may not, even though they are talking strong.
Yeah.
They may not, but then we'll say, it'll go to the Planning Commission, and we see the recent developments with the Planning Commission. For example, Andrew Jamila, as you read in the papers and as we've talked about there recently. So for the listeners out there, don't rely, act now. Don't depend on the other shoe to fall. Just get involved now if you are concerned.
Yeah, you got to get involved now. We're planning a pretty substantial public get together in order to share information,
mm-hmm.
and answer people's questions. People need reliable information. A lot of people out there don't have reliable information.
When is this going to happen?
Well, we've been deluged with so many things that have on our plate. We are hoping to do this sometime in September. Now, that's not a lot of lead time. But as soon as we get that date, we'll pass it on to you and the rest of the media.
Okay. Well, I'll be listening. All righty?
I thank you much. Good talking to you again, Carol, and keep in touch.
Anything else?
No. If anything else really important comes up, I'll make sure that you are informed, and you can in turn then let your listeners know.
And then we'll send out a message to the listeners that, as Rosa Parks said, she wasn't going to sit in the back of the bus anymore. We're not going to get run over by the bus anymore.
No, we ain't going to get run over by no bus, but I'd like to let your listeners know and let you know that the spirit of Rosa Parks lives on.
Yeah.
And so we are determined to do this in as decent a way as possible. We hope the other side has enough good sense and commitment to flexibility that they will downsize this development, which is badly thought out. It has its design features are made in Salt Lake City, and you know, just because you build a hotel and you build some other structures and a McDonald's and you put some tikis without any private parts on them and you call them Polynesian, that is an indignity that we've had too much of already. Mm-hmm. I think we all need to grow up. We got to stop this kind of nonsense.
Right, yeah.
And in the process, as we talk to them, we want to be kind, considerate, well-informed, and be able to articulate our case in a way that is both elegant and defensible.
All righty. Well, on that note, thank you, and keep me posted.
I will.
And whenever it's something developed, give us a call. We'll get it out on the air.
You're a good man, and it's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you. Anytime.
Bye-bye now.
Aloha.
Aloha.
All righty. Scary place, development going around, and we absolutely have no control. Imagine, it's like everything is being thrown at us at once. Streets, potholes, crooked politicians, dumb politicians, and we're allowing them to manage our affairs, and it's scary. I mean, if this was a movie, I would say I'd have my head under the blanket and just scared to death, because it doesn't seem to be anything is working, and we're still building and building, and the McDonald's is going out there, lots of jobs they've claimed, but how are you going to afford to do anything on that salary and other things? That, and is it a contained system? Do they import the workers from outside? Do they import the students? Do they all of that on that side, and what's going to happen on Coalina's side? And so, big problem. And please call your council if you're interested in expressing your dislike or like for this. 768-8000 is where you can call and just ask the information if you have a difficulty in finding your council's number. So anyway, and that's the information, general information. Well, I talked last week briefly. A lot of you recall generally the background on Mr. Rex Johnson, and I've posted it. Posted this information. As you recall, there was some bigoted comments and emails and jokes and things of that nature. Posted on Mr. Rex Johnson, who at that time was the executive director of the Hawaii Tourism Authority. And a lot of the people came and rallied around him and supported him. And those people were to have been, they didn't really take it serious. This was Ms. Hanabusa, Mr. Calvin Say, and they felt it was okay. And I just have one common thought about this, and if you object, then I can appreciate your objections. But this is the way I, off the cuff here. We live in a, quote, melting pot. We are a colorblind society. We have the Japanese Culture Center. We have the Okinawan Culture Center. We have a Polynesian Culture Center, and we have... And so, therefore, you would think that this is a community, the melting pot, everything is good. But apparently, if you are black, and if you're of a person of Micronesian or something, and you're not, your numbers, or you don't have the financial standing that other groups have in this community, you don't get the protection. When, in fact, across the board, all parties... If we are truly a melting pot, we can't be offended when we only speak harsh of people of Asian ethnicity or African American. We have to, as a group, collectively, as a community, stand up and say bigotry is not permitted anywhere amongst us, anytime, in any form or fashion. So We know that the state reluctantly, and I don't know all of the details because if you go to carolcox.com, you'll see what I posted up there, and this has been posted about Rex Johnson and Lingle and Hanabusa and Marion Higa and all of those guys that's supposed to be looking for the melting pot, managing the melting pot, making sure it doesn't boil over and doesn't burn and put the right vegetables in at the right time, so to speak. But what's happening somewhere along the line, if you don't have the financial or the numbers, you don't get the protection that should be afforded to you. So Mr. Johnson was sent out and he was asked to resign or removed. I don't know all the details, but from the Hawaii Tourism Authority, which was a state agency. Well, I'm just now informed that Mr. Rex Johnson has landed himself another job at the Pacific International Center for High Technology and Research, or PICTR. And that's over at University of Hawaii. And as you know, we don't know how he was punished, if he was in fact punished. We really don't know that. But he ended up with a job, and he is the project director of the National Disaster Preparedness Training Center in support of the University of Hawaii. This is an institute of higher learning. The things that come and occur there at the University of Hawaii, whether they've been cited, for example, for serious environmental issues or handling chemicals and what have you, and you would think within that system they would have a screening and would not allow. We don't have an apology from Mr. Rex Johnson. We don't know if he went through a class or in sensitivity training or anything. He ended up with another job. And what they're saying now is that he, prior to PICTR appointment, he was the president and CEO of the Hawaii Tourism Authority, where he worked closely with the U.S. Department of Commerce International Trade Administration. Now, no apologies. I've seen nothing, and if I've missed it, then my apology. But again, someone alerted me to this, that of his presence there, and they raised the concerns, you see. What about the credibility of the University of Hawaii? What about the credibility of PICTR? What about the credibility of the board members that work there and is party to this and participate with Rex Johnson? Will Rex Johnson include minorities and females in his hiring or in his staff? What is there to make sure? Now, receives federal and public funds, and there are young people there coming and going and minorities on campus. Remember, Rex Johnson had pornography and emails and jokes of content of racism, and he has landed himself a job at that level. What is this really a melting pot? And let me just share with you some of the board members of PICTR and some of them. Dennis Teranishi is the president and CEO of PICTR there. And Dennis is the president, and his real job, apparently, is the president and CEO of Hawaiian Host, Inc., and the largest producer and marketer of chocolate-covered macadamia nuts in the world. In addition, his leadership with PICTR, he has served on the boards of Economic Development Alliance of Hawaii, Island Insurance Companies, and Hawaiian Host. He also serves on the board of Kamehameha Schools and the College of Tropical Agriculture. Well, what part of these people would they say, we just can't have you, Mr. Johnson, or we need to assure the public that you've cleansed yourself of these thoughts and these behaviors? No assurance. I contacted and I contacted PICTR, and they were absolutely rude. I wanted to confirm employment, wouldn't confirm it, and told me I needed to send a request and approval from Rex Johnson to be informed or be told by that office, Human Resources, that he worked there. Well, I contacted Rex Johnson, and he said he's not interested in talking about it. Now, Brennan Morioka, the director of the State Transportation Board, has also landed him a position there on board of directors. So they are part of this board of directors. Now, I sent Brennan an email and asking some questions, and I'm still waiting questions from this board and Mr. Teranishi. No response. Absolutely nothing. So, again, there is some of the other board members, and there's a couple of them. Maurice Kaya, as you know, Renewable Energy Development Venture, he's part of that. And then here's an interesting one, Colbert Matsumoto. Now, you know, Matsumoto currently serves on the president of the Island Holdings, Inc., and chairman of CEO of Island Insurance Company, and he serves on the board of directors of Citibank, Hawaiian Host, and Sutter Health Pacific. But he also now is part of the chief executive officer of the Island Publishing, and then the Oahu Publications, Inc., and that is the parent company of the newspaper separate and the editorial board. And he was on the Hanneman staff. And also, he's been actively involved in as a civic leader in protecting and keeping and funding the Japanese Culture Center. So are these people able to sort through, and how can you be associated and incorporate Rex Johnson in your program without any assurances to the public or people like myself that are concerned that this he never dealt with the real issues? So that say a lot about the so-called melting pot. And don't want to get into it in great details, but I don't know if it's appropriate to see Rex Johnson at this level where many of people are going to be impacted or hired or fired or what have you. And I'm still waiting for the, just in case, Colbert Matsumoto and Teranishi and those guys. You will be answering me one way or the other. I'll talk until I just turn the dust here about this, because if you are concerned, you're a civic leader, and you're worrying about culture of any kind, then you should be worried about culture of all kinds. And if I'm offended, then you need to assure me that you can't engage with an individual who has demonstrated a behavior and carried himself in a racist and a bigoted manner, and then incorporate him in your work. And this is taxpayers' dollars. Also, the Naval Research funds some of this. So I don't know all of the connecting dots, but I did write a letter, and again, I say, asking specific questions so that I wouldn't make a misstatement and make a wrong statement as to alleging something that is not factual or true. But apparently, the style here, if any portion of the melting pot ask a question, the guys on the top or the top chefs or the cooks, the sophisticated ones, feel that they don't have to answer. Well, you got to know that I'm going to find out how and who hired Rex Johnson and what was the vetting process. Did he compete? Did he go through sensitivity training? Or was it that, oh, the heck with them, we'll move you out of there, give you a settlement, and then move you, and you can get another government office and a government position? And it was quite arrogant, so my comments to his arrogance is that you shall answer to us, even though you have been insulated by the Hanabusas, the Higas, the Calvin Says, the Linda Lingles, the Teranishis, and the Matsumotos, and Brennan Morioka, and those folks. You owe us, Rex Johnson. We're going to pull this blanket back, your coattail or your whatever, shirt tail, until you tell us if you're going to be in public and in a public position where young people of color, minorities, females, and gays, lesbians that might want to put in for jobs and seek employment, that we can be assured that you've been cleansed, and not because you say you have, but because you are, and you've gone through a process, and we can't take it for granted that you're going to do and avoid behaving in such a fashion in the future, because this impacts people. You destroy people when you project on them racist and bigoted remarks and comments, and it's supposedly it was just recreation and fun, but it's at the expense someone pays for it sooner or later. And I don't believe, personally, it's my opinion, that Rex Johnson's placement in this position as the director of the PICTR or the Emergency Preparedness Center is just simply wrong, and it needs some answers. And earlier we talked about Rosa Parks, but some say the fight is over. Some say Martin Luther King did good work. But something's wrong if we need to have, continue to have culture centers and African-American diversity culture centers and what have you. That suggests, one, it's protecting our history and protecting and preserving the history that we all have gone through, the negative things that we've been exposed to. But the frightening part of this is that we need, as a community, we can't shelter and harbor people such as, and when they've displayed behavior such as Rex Johnson. You can fold it the way you want to think about it, but I am appalled that this man could land a job back into a state system, and all that was done was he was offered and afforded protection, and now he has a safe harbor. And it appears that the University of Hawaii is just that, a safe harbor for a lot of crazy things. And so how do we look at this? And again, Brennan Morioka, a couple of questions I'm interested in. He's now working for CH2ML Hill. And I'm wondering, when did he get that job and when did he go? So what about all of this? And I, again, say, Rex Johnson, my hat's off to you. Whatever you got, they sure like. But we don't want to see another incident. And we would never know if he is engaged in this behavior or refused to hire any minorities or people of color or females or what have you. We would never know that, because this seems to be, when you call that office, there's a lady named Janelle Payne, for example, CFO Contracts. Will this PICTR give minority people a chance at getting contracts or grants if you have a leader that has behaved in such a fashion? So these are the things that worry me. It's not just that he sent out emails, but if you want to see, or you have a short memory and don't recall or didn't have a chance to see them, all of the jokes and the foul mouth comments toward people of color and females and people of Arab descent, go to carolcox.com, carolcox.com, and you can see there the jokes, and some of them have vulgarities or profanity, but it's on the internet, and I won't read the jokes here, but go there and look. And if you are concerned, fine. If not, just know that somewhere in this system, this state government, this federal government, whoever hired Rex Johnson, owe us an apology, owe us an explanation to ensure that we don't expect to have this occur again, and what measures are in place. So anyway, I'm going to be back here in about a couple of minutes, and I'll let you hear. We'll come back with Miss Momi Rogers. I'm sorry, Robbins, and talking about her book and candy canes and Coke. And I'm looking forward to seeing that. And we'll get there, and we'll be back shortly. One, two, 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 one, two,
had a little. I thought that I needed a lot. A little was overrated, but a lot was a little too complicated. See, zero didn't satisfy me. A million didn't make me happy. That's when I learned the lesson that it's all about your perceptions. Hey, are you a popper or a superstar? So you act, so you feel, so you are. It ain't about the size of your car. It's about the size of the faith in your heart. There's hope. It doesn't cost a thing to smile. You don't have to pay to laugh. You better thank God for that. There's hope. It doesn't cost a thing to smile. You don't have to pay to laugh. You better thank God for that. There's hope. Off in the back country of Brazil, I met a young brother that made me feel that I could accomplish anything. You see, just like me, he wanted to sing. He had no windows and no doors. He lived a simple life and was extremely poor. On top of all of that, he had no eyesight, but that didn't keep him from seeing the light. He said, us are like in the USA, and all I did was complain. He said, living here is paradise. He taught me paradise is in your mind. You know that there's hope. It doesn't cost a thing to smile. You don't have to pay to laugh. You better thank God for that. There's hope. It doesn't cost a thing to smile. You don't have to pay to laugh. You better thank God for that. There's hope. Every time I turn on the TV, there's hope. Somebody's acting crazy, there's hope. It'll drive you crazy. But I'm taking back my power today. Gas prices, they just keep on rising. The government, they keep on lying. We gotta keep on surviving. Keep living our truth and do the best we can do. Cause there's hope. It doesn't cost a thing to smile. You don't have to pay to laugh. You better thank God for that.
Alrighty, there is hope, and again, we'll be watching Mr. Rex Johnson, and as he said, he don't want to talk about it. Good, I will. And you're welcome to call into the show or come on the show, and I'll be checking with the board, and please answer my questions. Again, real quickly, I want to share with you a little bit of information, arm you with who do you vote for and when do you vote for them and why you don't vote for them. Let me give you, now, you know, Peter Carlisle, everybody say when an attorney goes and he's a city prosecutor, there's great hope and criminals going to get prosecuted, and because they've done that. And but there's something strange going on with this thing, this mayor administration, Mr. Carlisle. Whenever there's a problem, he seemed to pop and run to China, Japan, or whatever. Is he ever going to deal with our problems? For example, Andrew Jamila, I'm asking now, Mr. Carlisle, formally, over the air, and then I will be writing a letter, asking you to formally remove Andrew Jamila for the misdeeds that he's done, and a lot of you know, and we've talked about them. And also, in the same voice, or the same stroke of the pen, remove Miss Patty Teruya, because you see, she's critical and crucial to Mr. Jamila's role in the Waimanala Coalition. She, if you go to carolcox.com, you'll see an interview posted where Jamila acknowledged and admits that he didn't write the grants. Patty Teruya wrote the grant application. Patty Teruya approved the grant, then submits it to the mayor, and the mayor then funds it. So we need to stop this merry-go-round of corruption and craziness now. Please don't run to China. Where else could he run right now? Is there anything? Do they have a train in Indonesia, the backwoods of Indonesia he needs to look at? But anyway, but just to show you slickery and trickery on this, and why, keep this in mind when it comes to voting. Whether he's Republican, Democrat, whatever he is, if it's tricky, watch them. And I wanted to share with you the abuse and the taxpayers' money that is being squandered through the personal contracts that is granted. As you know, Favela, Kurt Favela, I told you about, he's personally contracted to go around, look at trash cans and trash, but we don't have enough trucks to pick up the trash. So his contract was canceled due to absentee of 45 days or more, and then they renewed it. So this is the way they pay one another back, the politicians, and have people to show up at meetings to interfere with the general public. I requested of Carlisle's administration the contracts, personal service contract forms that have been issued out and for the last couple of years. Hold your seats, folks. Peter Carlisle's office wishes to charge me $31,146 for spending time looking at records that would help him manage our budget. Because if I found that friends are being paid on the personal service contracts when we already have full-time employees doing that, you would think he'd be eager to give me that information. But he wants $31,000 and $146 to be exact, and the estimated time to be spent 634 hours and 47 cents. So I'm thinking maybe he should just get a personal contractor for $2,000 and let them do it, and give me the documents, because then he can turn around and manage our budget properly. Anyway, we are hurting, folks, and half of our cost has little or nothing to do with managing our affairs in government. It's managing their affairs, their friends and their relatives and what have you. So, again, I got information where, from, for example, the information you're providing on personal service contracts is useless. This is a city council person talking to the government office, city. Misleading and waste of government resources. You are providing quarterly reports on the last day of the quarter, on the day when your contracts all terminate. So are you implying that there are no personal service contracts in force and end of quarter, when in fact there are renewed the next day? Instead, you should be reporting at the beginning of the period of July 2010, which personal contracts have been extended, so the public can see who is and who is not on the government personal service contract. There you have it, folks. This is why we have no money, and this is why you're staring down the barrel at higher taxes, because Carlisle, like the rest of them, as much as I adore him because of his background in prosecuting criminals, but boy, he's giving away the candy shop. And I guess you can't arrest anybody if you're giving them away the candy. You just have to stand by and, when things get hot, run off to China. So anyway, we'll talk to you in the next hour. And again, I'll have Momi Robbins with her book. And there's some interesting things to talk about in the Waianae community that's going on through this. And I think you'd be very, very interested in them. It'd be quite rewarding. So I'll talk to you in the next hour. Thank you.
Put a spell on you.
'cause you're mine. You better stop the things you do. I ain't lying. No, I ain't lying. You know I can't stand it. You're running around. You know better, daddy. I can't stand it 'cause you put me down. Yeah, yeah. Put a spell on you because you're mine. You're mine. Georgia.
Alrighty, welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. That was Miss Nina Simone, Put a Spell on You. And again, I have my guest, Miss Momi Robbins, author of Candy Canes and Coke. And she's from Waianae.
Yeah, from Waianae, born and raised.
And I can tell you the book is good. I read some excerpts from it, and it talks and speaks of the struggles that... that goes on in many communities around the country and anywhere. Mm-hmm. And it's about love, relationships, and hardships, and all of those things, and drugs, and abusive relationships. So, Momi, thank you for joining me. And real quickly, tell our listeners a little bit about you, or a lot about you, and then how we arrived at this point with your book. The introduction that I read was you met someone at Bishop Museum or some kind of training and whatever. But anyway, welcome aboard and share with us what you...
Okay. Well, that's how I met my editor at Bishop Museum, and I can tell you a little bit about that later. But first of all, I just want to say thank you. Thank you, Carol, for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. So you're from Waianae?
Yes, yes.
Okay, and so...
Okay. Yeah, I am. I'm born and raised. I'm very proud to be from Waianae. I'm 50% Hawaiian, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I did. I wrote the book. It's called Candy Canes and Coke, and it's a very raw and very personal story about my struggles and failures. It's the beginning of my journey to find the real me and to improve my life and the lives of my children.
Mm-hmm.
But the bigger issue, though, is just the lifelong implications of beginning relationships just way too soon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, before we really understand who we are as individuals.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what makes us tick, what makes us happy and sad, and what we will stand for and not. And so mm-hmm. the book is me trying to find my way after getting into that situation. And I'm a teacher out at Waianae Intermediate School.
Mm-hmm.
I teach eighth graders, and unfortunately I see me in them, especially, in the girls. And that's why I feel like I need to share my story, because mm-hmm. I would like to help them, you know, stay away from things that, you know, I've experienced in my past. So
now, do you, when you want to help them, are you saying that you've observed the same cycle that has occurred with you?
Absolutely.
And it's occurring presently with them?
Absolutely.
And that is one of your motivations?
Absolutely. I got involved in a relationship when I was 12, mm-hmm. you know, way, way too young. I had no idea, no clue who I was. And I see that in them. You know, they're making the same choices that I did. And, you know, it's my job to teach them math.
Mm-hmm.
But before any learning can happen, you know, you need to make sure that their basic needs are met, really. Mm-hmm. And that's not happening when they're, you know, getting into relationships way too soon, and girls are deleting the boys' names off of their phones because their current boyfriends don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
Or girls are saying, you know, miss, that's okay that I can't, you know, I can't have a Facebook account. You know, I can, you know, because my boyfriend says so. That's okay because I can text, mm-hmm. and, you know, I can talk to boys at school. It's just, it's not okay. And I feel an obligation mm-hmm. to be there, especially as a teacher, you know, because I'm a parent myself, and I feel like the role of a teacher is just much more than the academics. Mm-hmm. The academics. So.
Now, you say relationship. How would you describe these relationships that you're concerned with, that you're hoping to break the cycle? And what was that kind of relationship you got in at 12? What does that mean? Boyfriend, in those days at our age, it wasn't texting. When you say relationship, the listeners, you know, was it just, hi, how are your phone, and spend 5 hours on the phone, and that was it, or what?
No,
when you say the relationship.
The relationship, what I mean when I say that is girls and boys are being exclusive at 12 and 13 years old. You know, they are kissing behind buildings, and, you know, they're holding hands in public, and they're being affectionate, and I know that it's happening on a huge scale. Mm-hmm. You know, they're calling each other on the phone and spending hours on the phone. That's the beginning. But they're talking about, you know, who are you talking to? You know, boyfriends and girlfriends want to know, you know, who are they talking to? What kind of conversations are you having? They're putting limitations on mm-hmm. on each other,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's very disheartening to see that forming,
mm-hmm.
you know, so at such a young age,
mm-hmm.
you know. Many times when I ask my students, you know, why are you getting into relationships and why are you starting out so young? They don't even know.
Mm-hmm.
They have no clue what relationships are and why they're doing it. They're just doing it because they think they see everybody else doing it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They tell me that they sometimes, some of them need boyfriends and girlfriends to keep them on the right track, or it feels good to get special attention from that one person, especially if you and yourself are struggling with struggling to love yourself, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I know when I was that age, I found myself in that relationship for the very same reasons, you know. I had a great loving family in spite of our issues, but looking back, I don't think I was prodded enough and
mm-hmm.
by enough people outside of my immediate family to figure out what made me happy and what made me tick and what my dreams were and how I would go about accomplishing them, you know. So I did what was typical, and that's starting the relationship.
Anyway, when the relationships, if someone listening to this, the problem would be kids in the old days, like I found myself on the phone after school, talking to a girl, you know, just hi, and just talking to them. Is that inconsistent with what was happening in the past? Should we really be concerned with that, or is it this new element of possessiveness, abuse, and dictating that you
mm-hmm.
can't talk to someone, you can't have their name on the phone? And then what's the next step? How does that manifest itself into what, or problems? And what have you seen?
Well, what I'm seeing is what you're describing is not what I'm seeing.
Okay.
They're getting into relationships and they're limiting each other and they're dictating to one another the way one person, the aggressor, feels like that person needs to be, you know. And what's happening is especially my girls, they're losing who they don't even know who they are,
mm-hmm.
you know. So it's abuse and insecurities and jealousy and, and all of those vices that are, you know, stopping them from fulfilling their dreams or even figuring out what their dreams are, you know, let alone achieving academically in school.
Right.
So, you know, that's the issue.
So you being a teacher, you're teaching math, but then you, this other side, can you counsel them, or are you prohibited, or is there restraints or constraints through the DOE? Can you engage in helping them, or what's the limitation?
Well,
are there any limitations?
There definitely are limitations, but I think teachers, administrators, and the education system are confused at times and limited by the role we think we play. I know I get confused because the relationship of teacher and student in a way sometimes needs to be professional, but in my heart, you know, I know it's not enough. Especially during middle school and that awkward stage in a child's development, my students, they need a counselor and a friend and a teacher and a disciplinarian and an auntie or uncle and a confidant. They need it all in one, you know, and it's a role requiring many hats. And I feel that it's a teacher's job to help parents of the students rear their children. But oftentimes I feel that we are limited by the issue of where and when our role starts and ends. But in my classroom, you know, I've had students share very personal, just heart-wrenching stories with me, and I've had to take on that role of being a counselor, you know, and I'm hoping that the book, Candy Canes and Coke, will, you know, help start conversations between mothers and young women, mothers and daughters, and and help to, you know, maybe bridge that gap and help start, facilitate conversations that maybe wouldn't have been started, you know, in the first place.
Now, Candy Canes and Coke, where'd you come up with that title? And if you would, you may have mentioned a little bit, but I'd like to go into detail. It's a very catchy.
Yeah. Well, Coke is, it's not Coca-Cola. It's cocaine. And my son had gotten involved in cocaine, and he was addicted to it. And that was really, that was a consequence of me starting a relationship too young. You know, I didn't know who I was. I had a dream. I've always had a dream of becoming a writer, but I kind of put that on the back burner because I was so, I was a part of a unit. You know, I was already in a relationship, and then eventually I got married. So my dreams weren't important. It was the unit, you know.
You got married at, you entered into a relationship at 12 years old.
Yes.
And was that the same relationship that you ended up marrying?
Yes.
And
yes.
When did you marry?
We were married at age 20. I was 20. Okay, and so I had my son just before 21.
So 8 years of this relationship, as you described. To keep the caller from waiting, we'll just see what. Good morning, caller. You have a question or comment for Momi?
Basically, to this, I'm just calling. You seem to be getting a lot of static every time, but I don't know if it's being done purposely, but evidently you're on target, so they're trying to stop you. Just want to let you know.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, okay. We're on target. You're being targeted.
Anyway, so my son got addicted to cocaine, and that really was a consequence of me getting into a relationship too soon. And so he was addicted to cocaine, and I had found out about it, and I suspected, and so I had taken him to have a drug test done, and I had called in 2 days later for the results, and I'd gotten the results, and I had gotten the results over the phone, and I had walked into my living room, and he was on the couch, and I was in a fit of rage. I grabbed the candy cane that was meant to decorate the yard with, because it was right about Christmas time, so I grabbed the candy cane, and I just beat him with it. And so candy canes and coke is for me a reminder of where I never want to go again, because I know I'm thinking for most people, you see the candy cane and you visualize sweet and Christmas and peace and joy. But for me, the candy cane symbolizes somewhere I never want to go. When I was in the middle of beating my son, I lifted up the candy cane, and it was a very still night, and the curtain had lifted up, you know, above the candy cane, it got the candy cane entangled in it. And I went to swing it again, and I couldn't. Mm-hmm. And so I looked at that as a sign from God telling me that, you know what, you need to put your fears and your struggles and your worries aside, and you need to take care of this child. Mm-hmm. And I realized that I needed help, and I wasn't the mother that I knew I could be. Mm-hmm. And so I sat down and I prayed hard to God, and I asked him for help. I asked him to help me. Mm-hmm. And he did. And I started writing the book because it fit. You know, I did all the right things. I mean, I went to counseling, I went to church, I talked to friends and family. I did all the right things, but it wasn't helping. Mm-hmm. And so I turned to writing. Mm-hmm. And the writing, it healed me.
Mm-hmm. So, your story then affords you the opportunity to clearly to share with others. You work in the community. You were born and raised here.
Yes,
you?
Absolutely.
And so, better than anyone, you know.
I do.
So, and you're seeing, so your book and your efforts here is to try and break that cycle for other parents,
absolutely.
Mothers, fathers. And
absolutely. I feel it's my obligation to help parents mm-hmm. sort of guide their children in the right path. I see them sometimes more than their parents do. Their parents are working 2 and 3 jobs trying to make ends meet. Mm-hmm. And so I feel an intense obligation to do the right thing by my students. And when I see that they're following in the same type of path that I was on, mm-hmm. it's very scary. Mm-hmm. It's very scary. And I hope that I can do my part and contribute and, mm-hmm. and keep those things from happening, you know, and talking to these girls and these boys and talking about relationships and what it means to be individuals before a relationship. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're trying to teach reading and math here. We need relationships 101 in our schools, mm-hmm. you know, and communication, and that's not happening, you know, and mm-hmm. goal setting and thinking about dreams. That's not happening in our schools.
Now, we're going to task the child to adopt this attitude and incorporate this thinking and do it. Is that possible, or it takes a couple of things? And what do you suggest be done to aid? Let's say a child wants to break away from a relationship and not engage, and how do they get and avoid that? What can they turn to, or what do you suggest?
Well, I know that I don't have all the answers, but I know that we need more natural helpers in our community, people who are willing to be honest and share. Mm-hmm. And before I wrote the book, I wasn't able to be honest, you know, and once I was, mm-hmm. just the improvements in my life and just the improvements that I saw was just phenomenal, mm-hmm. you know. And so I think that more people need to be honest and not be afraid of being honest and the mm-hmm. judgment and the ridicule that could come with mm-hmm. being honest. You know, when I start the year off, my students think I have no problems. They think I don't know what they're going through. I have no issues. That's what they think. And I'm born and raised in the community. They see me at Tomorrow's. They see me up in the valley, up in the homestead. They see, but they still think that I'm this person who knows nothing about what they're struggling with. Mm-hmm. And so it takes me a couple weeks to get them to trust me and to know that I do know what you're going through, and mm-hmm. I want to help you with that, mm-hmm. you know. And before I can teach you math, that's what we need to take care of. Mm-hmm. And so once I establish that relationship with them, then what happens is they share with me their fears and their worries and their struggles mm-hmm. and the reasons why they think they do the things we do. And we get to process through that. And so, you know, I see people and, you know, I come across people I haven't seen in a while, and they ask me, you know, what do you do? I'm a special ed teacher and math teacher at Wina Intermediate School. And you're such a saint. You know, no, I don't feel that way. I feel like I'm a community member and I'm obligated to be there, and I want to be there. And I feel like it's a privilege, mm-hmm. you know, to have that opportunity to interact with students on that kind of a level, mm-hmm. you know. And I think, you know, you asked me if I feel that we can, I mean, it's a huge task, but if I feel that we can do that, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, right now, kids 12 and 13 years old are being drawn into relationships because they think that's the typical thing to do. Mm-hmm. You know, because they see movies, mm-hmm. They see the celebrities, they hear songs about relationships, and they think it's magical and it's mystical. You know, we just have to be singing a different message. That's it.
Now, what would your advice or suggestion be for the parents to try and aid this child in breaking that cycle and not becoming part of that cycle? What would you offer to the parents? And your book addresses some of this.
Mm-hmm. My advice to parents and again, I am a parent of three children, would be to just talk. Mm-hmm. You know, talk and not be afraid to share and not be afraid of the ramifications of that. You know, opening yourself up and opening yourself up to questions and judgment and ridicule. Just talk.
Mm-hmm. Rather than telling the child, don't do drugs, if you've had the experience of doing drugs, let them know and tell them firsthand. Mm-hmm. You have knowledge, and do you believe that that child then will, as you say in your book, you were speaking, if they don't build that trust in you first or mm-hmm. Have a connection with you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Can you explain that in greater detail?
Absolutely. Well, for parents, I think children see their parents as the people that they are today. They don't know that they have struggles and fears and worries, and they had them, you know, when they were that age. Mm-hmm. And so I think just sharing just helps the child know that, you know, you've been there. Mm-hmm. You know, you possibly are there. And it just opens dialogue. You know, when the book first came out, my daughter's good friend had taken the book without my knowledge to share with her mom. And, you know, she came back to me and she said, you know, Auntie, my mom cried, you know, on a particular chapter. And I said, really, what happened? And she said, well, she cried and she said that she could relate to it. And, you know, Auntie, she told me some stories about when she grew up and when she was a kid, you know, and I didn't know that. And at that moment, I just teared, because that's what I wanted. That's what I hoped and dreamed and prayed to God that the book could do, mm-hmm. you know, is begin dialogue between mothers and daughters and just start those conversations. Mm-hmm. You know,
now, how did you sort through or wade through the emotion of this, your real life, and then to write the book? Was there any conflict, or did you struggle?
Absolutely.
I struggled. Can you give us a specific instance? When you want to express a certain thought or a certain event in your life, did you find difficult in writing about it?
Absolutely. Carol, it was painful. I think that's why it took me 3.5 years to write the book. I did. And when I first started writing, I was lying. When I was writing the book, I was writing what I thought I should say. Uh-huh. You know, and I think I wrote almost an entire draft like that, lying to myself. And then when I went back and I read it, I thought, I can't do this. This isn't helping me. So after the first draft, I pretty much scrapped it and I started again. And I decided that the next word I typed on that computer was going to be absolutely the truth, and it did. And that's when the true healing came. It came when I was truthful. But it's hard to be honest, because for so many years, you know, I knew that if I looked in the mirror, I wouldn't like what I saw, so I didn't look.
Mm-hmm. So,
you know,
so you would have you struggled and you felt that you weren't being truthful. So the title of the book would have been Candy Canes and Diet Coke, because you wouldn't have, you wouldn't have.
Well, maybe it would have been Candy Canes and Sugar Plums.
Yes,
I don't know.
Yeah, so that's good. And people wanting to tell the story and reach back and then you're staying in the community.
Yeah.
That in itself says a lot, that you were willing to turn around and challenge this and then become open about it.
Right.
And living there, because everyone knows you. And was there a struggle with that?
Yes. There definitely was a struggle with that. But I felt that I had an obligation to my students and mm-hmm. my community to open up and to not let fear hold me back, and not let fear let me not tell my story. Mm-hmm.
Good morning, caller. Comment or question?
Good morning. Momi, this is Rob in Ina Haina. And since your book came out, I've been dying to ask you, are you related to Roy Robbins at all?
Yeah, Roy is my dad.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he's my daddy.
Momi, you know, I remember when you were born.
Really?
Yeah, I worked with your dad for over 30 years down at the Royal. I'm retired, but
You know what? At the hotel.
Yes.
Oh, you know what? Actually, we have two Roys in our family, and that is my uncle.
Oh, uncle then. Okay.
Yeah, that's my uncle. That's a close cousin of my dad's. I love him too.
Well, I mean, I know this is off topic a little bit, but when you get a chance, could you give my love and aloha to your uncle Roy?
I absolutely will. And I'm sorry, can I get your name again?
Yeah, tell him, Rob.
Rob, okay, I will.
I used to work with him down at the hotel.
Oh, I will, absolutely. Rob from Ina Haina. Thank you so much.
As far as I know, there was only one Rob, so I think you'll remember me.
Okay, I will. I will pass that on. Thank you for calling in.
Good luck on the book, Mo.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Okay, aloha. Imua, yeah?
Aloha. Yes, absolutely. Imua, that's what we need to do, is go forward.
Where can we get the book?
Right now, it's available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com. Mm-hmm. It's available in the Kindle and the Nook, and it's also mm-hmm. available on the Google HD at
mm-hmm.
Target.
Mm-hmm.
It's not in bookstores yet, but
and
we're hoping.
And if I wanted to talk with you, or you have a blog, do you? And
I just started.
Well, that means
okay.
you're having
it. Yeah, we do. I do. I have a website. It's www.momirobbins.org. You can also get the book from my website, too.
Okay.
And I just share on the website, I share a little bit about my thoughts and the things that I've learned over these years of, that I've been writing the book.
Mm-hmm.
So, feel free to, or find me on Facebook. I'm on Facebook at Momi Robbins. Yeah, 1B.
Robbins, mm-hmm. yeah. R-O-B-I-N.
Yes.
It's not R-O-B-B.
No.
So
1B.
1B.
1B,
okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, this problem that children are facing, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're born innocently. Who are you placing the blame on? Who starts this cycle? Who introduces them to it? Is there one particular person in their life or in your situation?
No.
What happened? How did you arrive and get into this chaos?
You know, I don't blame anyone for it. My parents, I have great parents. I mean, we had our struggles, but I don't think that it's the parents. I don't think that it's I don't think it's anybody. I think it's just the world that we're in.
But I mean, you have to, I guess my question is, how do you identify? You have to, first of all, identify the source that's contributing to this problem. So that's my question.
Well,
how do you identify that so others, maybe they just overlooking it. So what things about them that they should look for?
Okay. Well, I think what first happens is, children see people in relationships, mm-hmm. and it's typical. That's what you do. You grow up, you get involved, you get in a relationship. But the thing is that they don't know that it's more important to be an individual first and to know what it is about you that makes you happy, that what it is that you would like to fulfill, you know, in your life and your dreams. They don't know that. So they get into relationships. And they don't know how to navigate their way through relationships.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and unfortunately, you know, it's been generations that have been going through the same cycle. So mm-hmm. what do they see? They see people who don't have the right communication skills. And that's mm-hmm. what we perpetuate. That's what we perpetuate. You know, and they see it all around them.
Okay.
We see it in music videos, in movies. We see it, you know, it's relationships are shown as magical and romantic, and it's all about love. But our young people do not know how to navigate their way through relationships. They don't know how to communicate. They don't know how to communicate their fears and their worries.
Right.
And I think that's what's happening. And our parents are busy. We're working to pay the mortgage and take care of the electricity bill and put food on the table. And
so then the solution to this would be the parents. Would you suggest that the parents make time? Because,
well, I think it's a community issue.
Well, but I'm not responsible for raising my neighbor's child right off the bat. Talking specifically about where the family unit. What can a family member do?
Okay.
Putting aside, maybe they can avoid going to all the baseball games or going to some or working. They have a tight schedule anyway.
Becoming
more efficient, maybe?
Okay.
Do you suggest that? Or what are some of the solutions?
I think that parents, the privilege I have at working at the school is I see exactly what's happening in the school.
Mm-hmm.
And not all parents have that privilege. And so that's what I want to do, is I want to let them know what's happening so that they can go and have the conversations with their children. You know, I think we just need to talk more. We need more to have more conversations with our children.
Mm-hmm.
And
so that would be
what
I'm soliciting
right.
from you is that what have you identified that the parents, because identifying the problem, as your book says, and then turning around and then say, we don't want to give the impression that children are responsible for their actions 100%,
right.
Because
right.
they are children. So that's
right.
what I'm soliciting from you.
And like me, when I was 12 and 13 years old, I hid a lot from mm-hmm. my parents. Mm-hmm. And I know that it's worse now. And so I would like to try to help make them more aware of really what's going on mm-hmm. in their children's minds and hearts. And I think with that knowledge, you know, with knowledge comes power. Mm-hmm. And so I'm hoping to provoke conversations, within the home about relationships and just individual dreams and goals and, mm-hmm. and talking about those things over the dinner table.
Mm-hmm. So will you be doing, other than the book tour or going and introducing your book, are you planning on having an outreach, participating in that? And if so, any ideas or any schedule?
Not at the moment. I'd love to do that. Mm-hmm. Right now it's working with my students and doing what I can there. Mm-hmm. And I hope to do that. Mm-hmm. Nothing in right now at the moment. Nothing solid anyway.
How do you, this is this monumental problem. And here you are, this little fish in the big ocean.
Mm-hmm.
You know what is wrong and you're willing to turn and involve yourself. I mean, a lot of people just say, well, you know, I've made it and I can go on with my life.
Mm-hmm.
You're daring to turn back. What are some of the frustrations? Well, either with the job, no support for, you know, you think the public education system should be contributing a little more? And if so, what do you think? And what are some of the obstacles you as a person seeing all of this?
Well, I think that we are focused as a nation. We're focused on test scores, I think, a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But and I'm not saying that that's a bad thing. I'm mm-hmm. just saying that we should be focusing on other things.
Mm-hmm.
We should be talking about dreams and goals and communication. We should be talking a lot about that,
mm-hmm.
you know, not just reading and writing and math. And so I believe that we need to start those conversations. And it's frustrating that not enough of those conversations are happening,
mm-hmm.
you know. And but I think teachers, you know, with myself, we're confused. We're not sure what the role is of teachers. And I think we need to start having those conversations.
Mm-hmm. Okay, this is the Carol Cox Show, and my guest is Momi Robbins, Robins. We're talking about her book and some of the things that she's observed and witnessed, and it's all about community. Her book is Candy Canes and Coke. And rather, some stories in there jolting. As I was looking at some of the content and as the preface talked about, you must be satisfied. 3 years. You describe it. It's been a long time, but
mm-hmm.
but you stuck to it and you were committed. It took you 3.5 years to write this book and
mm-hmm.
get it published. That's one way to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
But you got it done.
Right.
See, that,
and
I don't know many people who start off and you talk about the struggle of not telling the truth, but then you persevered and you now have this book and hope that many will benefit from it.
Right, I do. I when I started writing the book, like I said, and it was hard to be honest, but once I was honest, like once I wrote that first chapter, being totally honest, it just became easier. To be honest, because I saw what the writing was revealing to me. It was healing me. It provided me a fresh start. It provided me open eyes. You know, I would write and then I would read it. And it was like I was reading a story about somebody else. And I was able to tell that person, like, what are you doing? You know, like, what prompted you to do something like that? And then it forced me to analyze my behavior and to see what my contributions were to the chaos that I was living in.
Mm-hmm.
And so it became easier to write the book. And as I was writing, I felt the benefits. You know, I was improving as a mother and as a teacher and as a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was painful at times to have to recollect those memories and to share them. But after it was done, it was very fulfilling because of that that payoff that I was getting after writing each and every chapter, you know, and I never, I've always wanted to be a writer since I was 12 and 13. I wrote for the yearbook and I wrote for the newspaper and I knew I loved writing, but I had no idea that writing would save me from myself. Mm-hmm. And that's what it did for me. Mm-hmm. So even though, you know, it took me the 3.5 years and it was painful, it was very, very enlightening.
What's interesting is that a lot of the community people are viewed as they're wanting to go nowhere in life, and but all of them aspire to be somebody in some of importance.
Absolutely.
But along the way, and here you are now, you know, I was asked to bring you on, I couldn't resist. I mean, I put a couple of shows away, not because of the selling the book, but as I drive through Waianae and I see these issues and the cycles, and I'm from the same type of community, mm-hmm. same thing, and I'm thinking, this is a person. The book didn't really get me hot and bothered.
Mm-hmm.
It was the fact that here's a person grew up in the community and daring to return and talk about. And then, I mean, it's one thing to move to Chicago and tell your story.
Mm-hmm.
You see, you got a bit of insulation because these are all strangers and you can mm-hmm. tell the story.
Mm-hmm.
But you must have, fire in your belly now must be even burning hotter, because if you're daring to tell, air your dirty laundry, as you put it, you're either nuts or you're one heck of a person. I mean, because the average Jane and Joe, they put distance between them, and then
that's the problem, Carol. That's the problem. We need to change that, and that's what I'm hoping the book will help.
Yeah,
you know, I'm afraid. I am. I have to be honest. You know, every time somebody comes up to me and like, I read the book, and there's a moment where I'm scared. You know, I'm shaken. But when they tell, and I've gotten a great response, you know, and they tell me their story and they say, you know, I could relate to this or I could relate to that. That's the feeling that, mm-hmm. that I crave, you know, mm-hmm. that being able to relate to people and to just help each other get through the issues of life, mm-hmm. you know, and, I just feel like I'm blessed. Mm-hmm. I'm blessed having been from Waianae. I love the people out there. And I think that, you know, people outside may perceive Waianae as such, but it's not the case. You know, and when I was growing up, in spite of all the issues I had a lot of supportive family and friends around me all the time. And in spite of that, I still struggled through this violent relationship. Mm-hmm. But I think that there are many people out there who do not have the support, whether it's in Waianae or it's in Hawaii Kai or it's in Philadelphia or, you know, wherever it is. Mm-hmm. There are people struggling with these issues who do not have as much support as I did, you know. Mm-hmm. And I hope that me sharing my story will help others know that, you know, there is support out there. And, you know, even though it's frightening, to be honest, the payoff is just well worth the risk.
Mm-hmm. What should a parent look for, or symptoms that a child is involved in a relationship? Are there certain tips you can give the parents to look for?
Well, I know a sudden change in mood,
mm-hmm.
you know, or a change in behavior, mm-hmm. you know, maybe if a student or if a child, you know, is this happy-go-lucky, outgoing person, and then all of a sudden they're not, that, you know, that's a sign. I've seen that. And also if, like, phone habits have changed, or if their friends are changing, those are, I think, signs that you know, you need to watch out for.
And
we all
those.
Need to watch out for. Yeah,
and,
me too.
And for children, the 12-year-olds or anyone, what would you suggest that if they find themselves in a relationship where a person tells them you can't have text messages, you can't have Facebook, what should they do?
I think that they need to talk, to let people know what's happening, mm-hmm. so that they can get answers. That's the one thing at the end of all year, but especially at the end of the year, I tell my students who are going off to the high school that if you find yourself in need of something, you open your mouth and you ask for help, mm-hmm. and you don't stop asking until you get it.
So I'm a 12-year-old, and my boyfriend or girlfriend tells me, I don't want you to take any more text messages. Should that child abandon that relationship or be extremely concerned?
They should be extremely concerned, absolutely.
Should they?
And they should seek the help of adults they trust.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and not seek the help of other 12 and 13-year-olds that are pretending to know, you know, the way of the world.
Right.
You know, I had a student once. She was my student, and she had a friend who got pregnant. And the student, her friend wasn't my student, but my student had trusted me enough to come in and seek out, you know, advice. And so we talked about it. And what struck a chord in me is that, you know, my student had shared, you know, she's deciding to make this choice. And so I asked, well, why did you decide to make that choice? And she said, well, because all of my friends told me that that's what I need to do. So this girl who's pregnant is taking the advice of other 12 and 13 year old girls. Mm-hmm. She didn't think twice about talking to adults or other adults about the issue. And so we sat down and we talked for about half an hour, and you know, she said thank you, and her situation turned out okay, you know. And I really didn't have to do much. I sat down there and I listened. I gave some opinions. I gave her some, you know, like an action plan, and we talked about it, and she shared her worries and her fears, and it came out okay. And that's the kinds of things that are happening in the schools all the time. You know, our kids, you think they're not seeking out for advice? They are. They just don't know who to get it from.
Are there resources in school where they can go see a counselor?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So it's available.
It is. It's available. Our kids just need to know that, you know, these are the struggles that we have as adults, or that we either have or have had.
Mm-hmm.
And come, you know, come talk to us and allow us the opportunity to try and impart some knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like I said, that's what I wanted. You know, I'm 38 years old. I want to be able to impart some of the wisdom that I've learned over these 38 years with these children who are 12 and 13 years old.
Mm-hmm. So the drug abuse, eventually these relationships and the abuse, physical abuse, verbal abuse, does that lead these children down a really uglier path, like drug abuse?
I believe so. Because, well, in my situation, and it's not isolated to my situation, we were involved in a very dysfunctional relationship, and we had children, and my children were in that age, you know, where they needed the guidance and the nurturing, and they weren't getting enough of it. You know, and so my son was lost, you know, and he needed to find his way. Mm-hmm. And he turned to drugs to escape. And I didn't realize that.
And what
I didn't
age
realize
was
that.
This? You mentioned, and you tell the story in your book. What age was he?
14.
14 when mm-hmm. he. And so you have people out there. The child is already growing and being exposed in today's world, the media and
mm-hmm.
the MTV, VH1, and every other thing.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I was listening to some music last night, and I'm thinking, either I'm really old or the world has gotten really nasty.
It's gotten really nasty.
I started looking, and everything was explicit. The entire album. And then down at the bottom it said, 50 Cent is back to his original form.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, yeah, but we're probably going to be a dollar's worth of nonsense because every word and in those lyrics, now I'm beginning to understand. When I read your book, that's why I was going there looking at the rap music. And I'm not opposed to rap music. I like any kind of music.
Mm-hmm.
But just as doing a little research and thinking, what are some of the contributing factors? It's not all about society is ignoring these kids. It's also the kids are listening to, I mean, they're snapping their fingers and dancing, and they're being called B's and H's and S's and then, you know, and descriptions of the male's organs and all of this. 12 years old, and they're selling to these kids.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what, in my opinion, reading your book,
mm-hmm.
I'm thinking, I hope that you could speak to that, because that seems to be, while they're listening to a little music and soothing their soul, they're incorporating some terrible
of the language,
demeaning
Absolutely.
Thought. I mean, to incorporate. Just
and I'm not opposed to rap music either. I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is more people need to be doing the talking. They have a message, the music, that's their message. But we have a message also. And so we need to be doing as much of the talking as the celebrities and the movies. We need to be up there with the talking, you know. And so I'm not calling for censorship. I'm not saying anything like that. I'm saying, you want your stage, I want my stage too. That's your message, this is mine. That's what I'm saying.
When we got the request that you come on, and I went over to pick up some electronics, and I watched two cars pull up, and the parents, the doors opened, and the kids got out, and they went up to the movie, and they went on. The parents left. And I was thinking to myself, I wonder what movie, who chooses which movie? Does the parent have it in a row? Or good riddance, I got to go to work. And using the movie as a babysitter of sort. You know, I'm just thinking all of these things and thinking it starts somewhere. And if your book, hopefully people don't see it as just a book. It's some truth that they would never, ever talk about. And I'm sure, and again, my hat's off to you that you would dare write the book and then stay in the same
community.
That's admirable, because we say we want to help the communities, but are we really willing, you know? For me, I want to help the community, but I would look... it would not look right if I don't go to Waianae and hang out with the people and know that, because then it'd be questionable. Am I really helping the community, or am I just stirring the muck here to make trouble for my satisfaction?
Mm-hmm.
You, stirring the muck, seeing the pain, experience the pain firsthand, and now you have this book.
I think that's how change comes about. And I think that I would be a hypocrite if I weren't there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like I said, it is scary. I feel fear sometimes, you know, but I think that the payoff is worth it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the payoff is worth it. It's worth the risk. And if I can help other children out there not follow down the same path that I did when I was 12 and 13, then it's worth it.
Mm-hmm. And the schools, hopefully the public schools, maybe you need to change your work and become a counselor. No, I'm... but
I love being a teacher.
Yeah, but there is a lot of young people faced with this difficulty in life, making choices, and then thrust upon them is, I love you, you're mine, we're going to live forever, and then the world...
And you know, when you're 12 and 13 years old and you're struggling with loving yourself, that sounds like the 10 words that you want to hear all the time, you know, when you're struggling to love you and find out who you are. They need to know that when you're struggling to find yourself, you need to go search that out before you search out someone else. You know, before you try and find your self-worth in someone else, you need to find it in yourself. And that's not what we're not telling them that enough, I believe. And so as a parent and as a teacher, I feel it is my job to put myself out there and to say and to make those statements that, yes, it's hard, that are hard to make. But I think that's how change comes about.
So the book is Candy.
It's Candy Canes and Coke.
And Coke.
Right.
And
Candy Canes and
again,
Coke.
Again, where can we get it?
Well, you can get it from my website at momirobbins.org, 1B, or you can get it on Amazon Amazon or Barnes & Noble, or any major retail, online retail company. Yeah, and it's available in digital format too.
Okay, and they can download it and so get all of the nooks and...
Yeah, and on the Kindle, it's...
What would you say in parting here? What would you... The perfect message, if you had a chance to speak to them, what would you say without me asking you a question? The most natural response you could give listeners out there, and why this book would benefit them, and so forth and so on.
I hope that my book will help others know that they are not alone in the fears they have and the struggles they go through. As a woman, mother, teacher, and friend, I feel like I must share with women, and especially young girls who come after me, the importance of finding yourself and knowing who you are before you enter into a relationship. I hope girls see through my experiences the impact of low self-worth and the fear of on the choices we make. And that if low self-worth and or fear plays a major role in their lives, then it's something that needs attention. I believe that many young girls struggle with these issues, but I believe they don't believe that we all have struggled and in the same cases continue to struggle through the same issues. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I have the responsibility to share this with young women so that they don't feel alone.
Mm-hmm. So no child should tolerate this nonsense. If they find themselves in a predicament where they're being overwhelmed or possessed by a boyfriend or girlfriend or
absolutely
jealousy
not.
Or threatened and tolerate no hitting or any abuse, go seek a counselor if the mother and father isn't available. And that's the other problem.
Just keep asking for help and ask until you get it.
And a lot of the children or a lot of the homes composed of grandmother, grandfather.
Sometimes,
and there's
that
crevasse there of relationship. The loving and caring is fine, but
absolutely.
How does a 12-year-old go to grandma and talk to grandma? Maybe
I believe if more people were talking, the question of who to go to wouldn't be there.
Yeah, but it is here.
Right.
I like your book brings some very refreshing and some opportunity of hope. And so it's always easy to say what's wrong. I'm hoping to pick up the book and read its entirety and see, because I drive through and I look and I think, wow, she really was daring and candy canes and Coke. And, you know, you drive through Waianae and you see the plight and the difficulty and you see the young girl with the baby on the hip. And you wonder, is that, you know, my mother had me at 19 or 20. And that's okay, but I have aunts and uncles who father children at very young age. And that cycle, and it repeats itself all over the world, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's what happens sometimes. It's sometimes a typical thing to do. So you follow in that path.
Mm-hmm.
But to start talking about issues like this would, in my opinion, help create other paths for children.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so that's what I hope candy canes and Coke will do. You know, just make people think or make young people think about other possibilities in their lives.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. And I'm hoping that one day that you come back and we've said things have changed, and maybe the schools will not serve as an obstacle and not be afraid to tackle the problem as you've tried to.
Well, I know in our schools, in one intermediate especially, we've made a lot of strides in many different areas, and I'm very proud to be a teacher at Waianae Intermediate School. But you're absolutely right. There are other issues that we need to tackle, and I'm hoping that you know we can start working on those things.
Yeah, have they celebrated your book in the school that you are?
They're very supportive. They're very supportive.
Mm-hmm.
There are many people at the school who are very supportive, and I'm very appreciative and very thankful.
And is the DOE aware of your book, or have
No.
No. How do you
Not
get
yet.
It? To, how do you? Maybe they'll listen to the show.
Yeah, I'm hoping.
Because every little bit helps,
and
that would be really good.
Absolutely.
So anyway, in closing, any other comments for the
No, I just wanted to say thank you. Thank you so much for the opportunity to come in and talk about this important issue.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're more than welcome. And anytime, I just tell many people, this is not really a show. It's I'm trying my best to give back to the community or help serve the community in a broader sense, not just Waianae, but because the same problems exist everywhere.
Everywhere.
Hopefully someone listening today may think, okay, it's okay. There are problems out there.
Absolutely. What you're doing is exactly what I think we need to be doing. We're talking about and having the conversations and trying to impact change. So thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you for joining me, and I'll see you again.
Thank you.
And thank you all for joining me, and I'll see you next week, and hopefully we'll have some answers. And aloha.
Red alert. Red alert. Saturday morning.
Black is the color of my true love. His face, so soft and wondrous fair.